This is the beginning of Class 5.
Sāsī bhūti yuṣṭhīṁ etā śāṁ Vīrā viṣṭhī nyandē yambādī Sāṅgē śindhū mitte uvādī
results. And we had all these different kind of karmic results that come from one deed, mainly three different results that Tsongkhapa pointed out. And then I don't think the course would be complete if you ready? Okay. You alright? Anything? Like batteries? No? Okay.
No.
Alright. This is very important. Not that the other one's on. But one thing that always bothered me about karma is that I studied Abhidharma for, 15 years. I studied all those other things. I didn't see anything that explained how the karma gets carried, and how the karma stays in my mind, and where does it stay? And, what kind of proof can you give me that I can accept that karma really operates like that? And then it was years later, it was maybe, 15 years later, I was in a class... And it was about this book. It's called Uma.
Uma.
Gombarapsa.
Gombarapsa.
Uma.
Uma.
Gombarapsa.
Gombarapsa.
Uma is what Professor Thurman named his daughter. No joke, because it means Majimika, middle way. And that's exactly why he named him. He's in love with that subject, which is very proper. And, so Uma means middle way. Gomba means the real intent of somebody. What did he really have in mind? There's not really one good word in English for that. I don't know. The real thought behind something. Or the real reason why he said something. Or what he really had in mind. And an upsell means a total clarification. Total clarification. So this is the name of a book by Jet Tsongkhapa. I can't call him Tsongkhapa, okay? Impolite, I call him to say, hey, you. By Jet Tsongkhapa, when was he born, do you remember? This book is about the middle way. From the point of view of the highest school of Buddhism, what's that?
Majjhima.
It's called Madhyamaka. This is the highest of the four schools. Yeah. inside of Madhyamika, there's two parts, and this is the higher part called. So the first one, thing I want to say tonight is we're out of the Abhidhamma school for tonight. Okay? Forget Abhidhamma. There's two parts, and this is the higher part called. So the first one, thing I want to say tonight is we're out of the Abhidhamma school for tonight. Okay? Forget Abhidhamma. Alright? I'm speaking tonight from Mahayana viewpoint. I'm speaking from Madhyamika Pratigika viewpoint. Okay. Highest of the Madhyamika schools. Highest school. Secret teachings are based on this also. Lamrim is based on this. You know, all of the highest teachings are based on Madhyamika Pratigika. The Madhyamika Pratigika had a fight with the
Chittam.
Sampa. Sam means what?
Mind.
Mind. Sam. Sampa is that stuff they eat in. No, not really. Sam means only.
Just.
Just mind.
Mind only.
Mind only school. Right? Mm-hmm. This is the Tibetan name for the mind only school. And it's on the subject of where karma stays that you really find out why the mind only school is called the mind only school. It's very, very important. It's very sexy. People like the mind only school. They talk a lot about it. A lot of people have no idea what it means. So you're going to get a dose of mind-only school tonight. Someday later, we'll do real mind-only. But it's in their discussion of how karma stays in your mind and how it works in your mind that you really see why they're called mind-only. And I think what I want to say from the beginning, and I want everyone to hear it, is that their presentation of how karma works is basically accepted by everybody, by the higher school. By Madhyamika Pratigika.
What do you mean, basically?
Some details are not accepted, but most of what I'm going to say tonight, and I'll tell you what the details are that aren't the same. But what I'm going to say tonight is the way it is, the way karma really works according to even the highest schools. It's very, very important. And when I got to this subject, and when my teacher went through this subject, this was that famous occasion. It's the only occasion that I interrupted him blatantly. You know, I broke into the class and I said, this sounds great to me. I don't see anything wrong with this. You know, is this correct or not? And he said, it is correct. You know, we can accept it. Higher school accepts it. And that's all. That was the big occasion. You know, and that was like, then I could accept karma. You know, then I believed karma. Because it sounded so rational to me. Okay, so here we go. Very important class.
So, Michael, what you're saying is this is a prasangika commentary on the mind-only explanation.
It's where prasangika takes on the mind-only school on some points, and then they sort of purify their viewpoints. Gomorotso is a huge word, very difficult, and you'll see from the reading. I mean, the guy who edited it got a headache, Vincent Montenegro, he went home. It's very deep. Tokapa is a genius. Total genius. According to us, he was taking dictation from a Buddha. Okay? And you'll see if you read it. If you sit with a few sentences for a few days, you'll figure it out. You know, that's right here.
What's the name of? Did you say what
the name of his word? The name of his word translated is Illumination of the True Thought of the Middle Way. That's continue reading.
That's the Umar Gompa.
Umar Gompa Rasa. Total illumination of the real intent of who? Ah, it could be Chandrakirti. Probably Chandrakirti. Total illumination of the real intent of who? Ah, it could be Chandrakirti. Probably Chandrakirti. Don't mix it up him with Dharmakirti. A lot of people do. Dharmakirti is the logician. Chandrakirti is the middle way philosopher. Okay, anyway. What happens? You did a karma. Let's say you did a bad karma, okay? You killed somebody. Then, now let's say you yelled at somebody. Like I just did before class. Apologize. When the result comes back to you, what supposedly happens? What is supposedly happens to you?
You get yelled at.
You get yelled at, not once, but many times. Okay. But basically, someone is yelling at you. What is going on at that moment that someone is yelling at you? It's very important for understanding how karma ripens. Okay. There's three elements going on.
Okay. This is the guy.
Oh, it's bad. The first element is the mind, okay? His consciousness. Okay, I don't know what
We don't say it's the mind. Does it look like a brain?
Yeah.
Okay, that's called Namche. Nikki, not Mikey, but Mickey. Nikki Namche. Okay. Nikki Namche means consciousness of the eye. You're having consciousness of the eye right now while you look at me. You're aware of your eye. You're aware of the colors, you're aware of the shapes. That's consciousness of the eye. Okay, so while the person's yelling at him, let's say the person's got a red face. We're concentrating on the visual aspect. Okay? His Miki Namba Shepa is functioning. He's having a, you know, you're at work, you're at the office, the guy stands up from his desk and says, why aren't those JCPenney pieces here yet? Which is what they said to me yesterday, you know, at 12:30 at night. You know? And they're looking at you in the face as well, and that's when I'm aware of his red face, my consciousness, my awareness of his red face is Miki Namba Shepa. What's the faculty that allows me to see his red face? Remember the eye faculty, the eye power? Where is that?
Right behind the eye.
Yeah, according to Buddhism and according to Western medicine also, it's a patch of cells at the back of the eyeball that sense the colors and shapes and transmit it to the mind. Okay. So there's a thing called, I'm not a very good artist. That's why I never drew anything up here. But there's this spot, right?
Receptors.
Receptors back at the back of the eye. Here's the eye, right? And there's the what we call the Mickey Wamba. Pretty bad, huh? Just come down the hallway to see my drawing. Okay, Mickey Wamba. That's right there. What's the Miki Wamo?
It's eye consciousness?
No, this is the eye faculty, the eye power, the eye, what you call the eye, what do they call it?
Cones and the rods.
The cones and the rods, yeah. The eye
perception
faculty. The physical, it's physical, it's matter, it's physical matter. It's the receptors. It's the nerves, it's the end of the nerves. You have them all over your skin for touch. You have them in the middle of your ear or somewhere for hearing. And then what's it looking at? This guy's got a red face, right? This is the boss. His face is all red. And he's yelling, okay? That's what we call the you. Excuse me?
Number two. You said there were three things?
Yeah, well, now we got three.
Oh.
You're looking at the red face. That's colors and shapes. They are sensed by your eye faculty. And based on that, a consciousness grows.
When you say consciousness grows, do you mean the mind apprehends?
You're aware of his red face.
Is that the apprehension? The
yeah.
Mind apprehending?
It's the awareness of his red face. This is like the sense of it. The physical sensation of redness and shape. And then the mind is doing all this interpretation.
He
doesn't like me. But don't forget, this is not really interpretation at this point. This is just a eye consciousness, awareness of red.
Awareness.
You're aware of my red here.
It's not interpretation yet.
No. You could have, you know, theoretically, if your brain was not functioning, your eye could be transmitting. Your eye power could be working, but your brain wasn't doing anything. You could say. It's actually true of the first instant of the instant of the instant of that perception. The eyeball has already sensed that color, but there's a time lag for it to inform the. It actually creates an eye consciousness. Okay. And then theoretically, the last moment of looking at his ugly face, this is still operating, but this has finished now. You're still aware of red, but this is already finished. The last moment of his red face has already passed down the pipeline. Okay. So that's what's going on. There's three things going on. Now, what do the mind-only schools... Now we're in the mind-only school. What does the mind-only school think? How does the karma ripen? How does this event take place? Okay. They say something very interesting. They say there's a thing down here. It's the first time I ever tried this. Okay. Eat your bad luck, because you're in the first class. It gets refined. This is something... This is a big This is called kunshi. Say kunshi.
Kunshi.
I'm about to explain it. The big worm. No. In Sanskrit, very famous. You hear people throw it around, you might as well know it. And people love this word. Alaya Vijnana. Say Alaya.
Alaya
Vijnana. You know, you'll hear people in universities who love this. Alaya, or she, Kun Shi, means basis consciousness. I translate it as foundation consciousness. You might hear it translated as storehouse consciousness. It means a foundation consciousness. And they say that all those karmic seeds are sitting in this consciousness. They are resting in this consciousness. Mm-hmm. And when the time comes, they produce Nikki Namshi. Here's that little seed, okay? What's that seed? Kali, you know that word. Mental seed.
Yeah.
It's a cute word. People always remember it.
Yeah, one second.
Sounds like pierogi. No.
Bok chop.
Bok chop. Very faint. People love this word. I don't know why. It sticks in American people's minds. I don't know. It must sound like something. Bok chop. Okay? Bok chop. This little seed here, this little guy here, karmic seed. Seed of your karma. Bok chop is sitting in where?
In the ayaya.
Sitting in the Alaya Vijnana. Sitting in the foundation consciousness. And then it starts to grow. It starts to give its result. Okay? What happens? It creates, I'm making numbers, not numbers. It creates that awareness of the red color of my boss's face. That grows out of that base consciousness, that big pool, my personal consciousness pool. It suddenly generates suddenly produces an awareness of a red face.
Can you
follow that? Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, is that separate and distinct from the raw awareness, the sight awareness, or does it go on top of it?
No, it is the raw awareness. It is creating. Yeah, oh yeah. This is a totally different consciousness. It's like a big pool of all your karmic seeds. It's in you. It's not connected to any of your other consciousnesses. It's not connected to your eye, ear, nose. It's totally separate. It's a totally different consciousness that you have. It's sitting in your mind, and it's the storehouse, it's the pool where all your karmic seeds are sitting. And when the time comes, they produce an eye consciousness. When you say eye consciousness, it's not like you're thinking, oh, I like this color, I don't like this color. It's just the awareness of the color. Yeah?
I have two questions. First of all, is bok chop and seed the same thing?
Mental seed. I'm using the translation mental seed for bok
chop. They don't
people call it propensity, people call it karmic energy, you know, whatever you want. Bhakchat means this. I'll give you an example, very famous example in my mind. You know, I remember when I first met Rinpoche, he didn't have a green card. Somebody had messed up his papers. It took like 5 years to get his green card straight. We used to go out every day and watch for the yellow station wagon out the temple window, you know, the postman. And then when he came, we'd run outside and he'd say, not yet, you know. And then one day it came, and we were jumping up and down, and so now he can stay in the United States. And the next morning, we're out at the window again, you know, waiting for this yellow car. We have a bok chop for a yellow car. That's a common bok chop. This, we're talking now karmic bok chop. Well, it means a mental habit, a mental seed, a mental thing. Synonyms are given in your meaning.
I'm not sure if I...
But it's not further along in the ripening process than the actual seed that's stored in the reservoir.
We're going to talk about when the seed gets planted, how it stays, and how it grows. I'm not up to that yet.
Synonym for seed.
Mental seed. Mental seed. It's not a word for a physical seed. Physical seeds are not
right,
called
right.
Bok chop.
The other question I had was, if this bok chop ripens and becomes the eye consciousness of the red
doesn't,
day,
well, you can say
well,
become,
or it develops. Produces
a,
produces it.
An awareness of the redness of the face. Yeah.
Does that same seed, that same bhakti, does it produce the auditory awareness of the
yeah.
red face?
Yeah. Oh, is it the same bhakti?
Is it producing more than one consciousness?
Could. That's a long story. Yeah, it could. It could. That's a long story.
The eye consciousness doesn't hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is kunshi technically part of the mental consciousness?
We'll get into it. According to all Buddhist schools, there are six consciousnesses. which are what?
Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body,
and mind. Consciousness of your thought. That's where you hear yourself thinking. Those are accepted by everybody. The mind-only school says there's two more. Only the mind-only school says there's two more.
And
the big one is Kunshi. Does Majjhimika Prasangika accept this Kunshi? No. And we'll get into it later. But why do you think they have to have a thing called Kunshi? Why do you think they think they need a thing called Kunshi? Why did the mind-only school come up with this thing called Kunshi? You gotta have a place for the seeds to stay. And the Majjhimika Prasangika school said, look, your theory about having a place for the seeds to stay, everything else, that's fine. We accept everything you say. You don't have to have a separate consciousness called Kunshi for it to stay in. I'll get to that later. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I was following your jargon or your terminology as to where the seed comes from. You know, you're talking about eye consciousness. When you say eye consciousness, are you referring to Mickey Wongpo, or are you referring to something different?
I refer to it as the faculty or power of the eye. The physical matter which senses the redness. This is what I call eye consciousness. This is the brain part, the eye consciousness, the consciousness of what you see. I'm seeing something. It's even more basic than that. It's even more raw than that. It's just the awareness of the color. Even prior to the interpretation. It's mental.
So,
but it's the mental awareness of the color.
So if you didn't have if you wouldn't see it at all, if you didn't have a seed? I mean, you
if
wouldn't
you
see your breath yelling at you?
We're getting
there. Okay.
So when you say that Bakchak, the seed arises, you're saying it only arises in the eye consciousness, the Miki Nanta.
Great question. No, a good lesson is supposed to flow like that. Okay, he asked, is the Bakchak creating anything else? Yes. It's creating the Mickey Wongo.
In the Yule?
Get there. I'm cranky tonight, okay? I warn you in advance. I'm sick. Okay. The Bakchak, the Kunshi, produces a mental event, and it looks like your eye. It looks like the faculty of your eye. It looks like you interpret it to be the physical faculty of your eye. It's an emanation of Kunshi. It's Kunshi producing this specter, this image, which you think is your eye. But it's not. It's all coming from Kunshi. It's Kunshi looking like a what?
Are you still talking about the guy yelling at you?
Yeah.
So this guy yelling at you is making your eye look like
your eye? No, karma is. The karmic seed is producing consciousness.
Yeah.
Which looks like an eye.
The physical eyeball.
Yeah, like the cells back in the back of your eye. And you take it to be your eye. Faculty. That's the thing that if I poke it out, you can't see anymore. And you're aware of your eye. I mean, you're aware that you're seeing, right?
So they say there's no such thing as an eye?
We're getting there.
Okay.
Michael, you're saying that the karmic seed produces the consciousness that looks like the eye?
The karmic seed causes an instance of Kunshi, which looks to you like your eye power, but which is actually just part of consciousness.
All right. Is Kunshi the collection of Bakchaks, or now you're saying it produces the Kunshi, or the Kunshi produces?
It's both. It's the place where the Bakchaks stay, and it's what starts to look to you like your eye.
So it's the place where the Bakchaks stay, and then when they become activated, it's the place where they
perform.
The thing
that looks like the...
Where they mimic...
Yeah.
What would otherwise be a uninterfered with eye sensation.
So you're saying it all comes from the same box.
Right. And that it's all consciousness. So they have to say there's no...
Eye consciousness.
No. Worse than that.
Yule.
Yeah. They say there's no outer forms. They say there's no outer objects at all.
So
they're not mental.
Yeah. So what about the, are we alternating then between unobstructed Wong pose and Wong pose that are being actually mimicked by Bok Choks, or we're always having Bok Choks.
Any Wong
pose
you ever
that.
Have is a result of a Bok Chok. Any time you think you see something outside, it's just you seeing your own mind looking like that.
So our retinas really are just sitting here doing nothing all the
there
time.
Is no physical retina.
You just drew it on the board.
No, this is Kunshi looking like a retina.
No, I'm not talking about the would-be retinas. I'm talking about the actual retinas.
There is no such thing in this. There is no such thing in this. All cases of retina are Kunshi looking to you like a retina because of your karma.
So we might not even exist as physical bodies then.
Thank you. If you don't exist as outside physical forms, no, they would say that. That's why they're called Senpai.
So Mickey Wampo is the display of Bok Choks. It's got nothing to do with an eye or anything. Yeah. According to this school.
There's something there which is mind. And it looks to you like Tom Kylie sitting there talking to you.
But when you say it's mind,
it's my own consciousness in the form of, it's something not out there. It's right here. And I'm just, all the time, I'm just seeing this thing, right?
It's
stuck
it's
in my
eye.
It's
not right there.
It's not even there. It's
we
stuck
think
in
it's
my
there.
Mind.
It's not an eye. We think it's an eye.
Yeah.
But Michael, when you say mind, you mean eye consciousness, right?
Yeah. But it's the same for all the other consciousnesses.
Right.
Okay.
So we're not going any deeper than eye consciousness.
Well, we're trying to pick an example which is concrete.
Great for Halloween either.
I thought it was going to be real close. But this is very, very profound. This is very close to what's actually happening. Doesn't it make sense that if bad karma creates some kind of suffering, that it's actually creating all the events of that suffering? It's creating the object that you see, it's creating your eye that sees it, and it's creating your consciousness of it. And didn't we just get through a whole course saying that mind has to produce mind?
So where's the basis in this picture?
What do you mean? The basis consciousness? The foundation?
No, the basis upon which, the empty basis upon which all of the attributes are laid.
That we'll get to that. You're not, that's not even talking to you. We're talking right now for the first confusing 45 minutes, you're going to be in the mind only. And I'll confuse you more.
So what you're really talking about is how we perceive objects. You keep saying you perceive your eye, and that's confusing me. I don't understand.
Well, is there something about Janet Diamond that if I took this pen and stuck it in it, that the world would blank out for you? Yeah, that's your eye. It's what you call your eye. It's the doorway to all these colors and shapes. When you close your eyes, it doesn't work, and all you see is darkness. And, by extension, the very thing that you're seeing, me, for you, is just another part of your brain. You're just seeing another part of your brain, looking like Michael Roach. That explains why everybody has a different perception of me. That's why some people come to class and bored to death, and some people like it. I mean, that explains everything very well. That's mind-only school. And that's how karma grows. There is no outer thing.
That doesn't explain your own self-perception of yourself,
absolutely,
as opposed to me perceiving
absolutely.
You.
No.
Because if it's
mind
only, then I can it. Say you
yeah,
don't
I
even
love
exist.
This class. That's very interesting to me. Yeah, sure. That explains everything.
No, but I'm saying then I could say you don't even exist, except in my mind.
That's
but
true.
You feel
that's
like you exist.
But
you
think
you
exist. I exist in my mind. I mean, I think I exist outside my mind, but they say that's a mistake. You don't. You don't exist outside.
So there's no proving that you exist or I exist.
There's no proving that I exist for you. I don't know if I exist for you.
No, there's no proving that you exist. I know you exist for me.
I don't know.
You
see
me, so I
exist. What are you talking about?
So you're back to relative and ultimate reality. And of course you exist because
you perceive me, and you're not
right.
crazy,
so
you're not drunk,
that's
you're not insane, and you're not, that's fine.
This is all ultimate.
No, this is explaining how things exist to the relative, actually. We'll get through it. Oh, so what is emptiness to the mind-only school? I don't want you to write it down, but for you, because your mind's on the point right now. Emptiness in this school is the lack of any separate seed for the object and the mind itself.
Say that again?
The perceiver and the perceived thing are empty of being caused by any separate thing. And that's emptiness. in one sphere. What they're trying to say is, look, the mind that sees the angry boss and the angry boss itself grow from the same mental seat.
In the mind or its form?
In the mind or its form. The same karmic seeds in your mind is producing that boss's red face, it's producing the eye that sees that boss's red face, and it's producing your awareness of the boss's red face. Everything's your fault. Sorry. Okay? That karma ripening in your foundation consciousness is creating him. What does he exist of? It's just your mind.
But if four people say that he has the red face?
They all have the same. That's where we get into collective karma. Collective karma means, because we're all having this class together, we're all going to enjoy some event in the future if we have the right attitude. That's all. Sure, if people get together and do something together, and as the karmic result, they all experience the same thing together. Everybody in New York has the same karma to enjoy the same results. Someone who died last night, Carmen's father, he lost the ability to enjoy that result now. So that explains everything. Quite nice.
Yeah. So would another way to say this be to say that the functioning of our mind imputes a label onto everything that exists, and nothing exists outside of the imputation.
That really
of the mind.
Is a little step higher. We didn't get to that yet. You can say impute in the sense that you think it's an outer object. John Stilwell, I swear to God, he looks like he's out there.
Yeah.
But it's really just my own mind, seeing my own mind, looking like John Stilwell.
So
if he's pleasant to me,
yeah,
it came from a virtuous spot.
So in this school then, what is the raw material that the mind is seeing? It's seeing itself.
Mind.
What is it? What is mental. Mind that it's seeing?
It's consciousness. Seeing consciousness.
Consciousness
seeing,
perceives consciousness.
It's seeing some kind of emanation of Kunshi.
If there is no body and there is nothing, how can you see the body?
How can there be other beings? I mean,
say it again.
How can there be other beings? There can't be other beings. There
aren't. Why not?
Because it only appears as if there's other beings to what appears to me to be an I.
Well, you can
and
say
what
that
appears
we're
to
like
me to be my brain.
Spaghetti noodles that never touch each other, maybe.
Pardon?
Maybe that's true. Yeah, the Tom Carley I see is not the Tom. Maybe there is a Tom Carley experience in himself as Michael Roach. I don't know.
So would you say then that the mind is everything? I mean, you see, this is what the inner outer is what's mixing me up, because the mind for me is in here. You know?
Yeah, they say no outer object. Outer object's going in.
So there's nothing outside of this
there's
little globe on top of my
object,
shoulders,
which is just the flowering of a karmic seed.
Projection.
It's not a projection. We didn't get to there yet.
No, but he's saying there's nothing.
Not even
there's nothing.
With your body and with your speech, if there's no outer object.
An apparently outer object does an outer thing to another apparent outer object, and that's correct.
So you're saying there's nothing.
It's all in your mind.
None of you exist.
You're saying if there are outer objects.
Wait. She raised her hand and she's very interesting. Go ahead.
Two things. One, I've asked what I consider to be kind of high Buddhist teachers, well, one is Rinpoche, and the other was a Chan master. What influence do mind streams have? What connection do mind streams have on each other? And both of them said, they thought from it, they said, they can influence each other. That's all they say on it. So that's about the next thing. And then the other is, if you say the perceiver and the perceived object are both produced by the same seed, how would you link that grammatically to the definition of emptiness?
I lost that. The perceiver and the perceived thing are empty of having any separate substance. That's why there's a lot of emptiness. You got to get it straight. By the way, it's not a crazy thing at all.
They're empty of what?
Logical.
The perceiver and the perceived.
Any separate substance. They are the same stuff. Looking
empty of anything separate.
They are empty of any separate substance. You don't have to know that. It's not in your homework. Somebody asked me. It wasn't going to be really friendly.
So if your mind is in the scope of existence, and my mind occupies this finite amount of space, then that means nothing exists outside of this finite amount of space.
Right.
But you don't know.
So why practice dharma? I mean, what beings are there to help?
How not to be a nihilist?
They didn't say beings exist. They did not say beings exist.
You just said that the yule, the one, everything.
Did I say the yule didn't exist?
No, you said it was a result of the bhakti.
I said it was kunshi because of bhakti's influence, right, appearing as a yule, and you want all those appearances to be happy. That's fine.
So you practice dharmas to fool yourself into thinking that you're helping beings and everyone's happy.
I fool yourself.
That's what you said.
I'm not fooling yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So you can produce seeds that make you believe that they're happy beings that are being transformed.
Yeah,
right.
That's exactly what you're going to do.
According to the school.
Because if you don't, and very close to the Magamika Pasadita, what's the alternative?
So all references to helping beings is really an illusion that the...
Well, it's an illusion. It's only an illusion if you think that those beings are somehow separate from your consciousness.
They still exist, but they're just separate.
They have no existence outside of your consciousness. They absolutely exist. They're absolutely valid.
So in the context
absolutely
of the correlation between
you absolutely
the two people,
have to help
they have,
them.
Yeah, okay. Because you have to share.
They don't exist the way you thought they
did. So you're saying they're findable or unfindable?
Yes, in this school, they're all findable.
They're findable?
In this school.
Outside there?
Not outside. No, not
outside. Okay, that's what I meant.
So
they're out there, but they're unfindable out there.
Oh, no. Did you say out there?
Yeah.
You only said unfindable.
Well, you said there might
be... Out there, no.
There are other beings out there.
No. Outside. No. Outside of your consciousness, no physical outside force. No.
Oh, I'm talking about forms. I'm talking about beings.
Beings.
Beings is, you know, 90% of their bodies, okay?
So how do they distinguish this from when somebody's dreaming?
That's an excellent question. And the Prasangika says the same thing to them. Well, then dreams would have the same reality as this. And they get into that. It's a big debate. It's a tremendous question.
Because that's what happens in a dream.
I even started to translate it, and it got to be like 3 o'clock, and I cut it out. It's a big question. Yeah.
What's the most basic definition of how to identify or what is a mind stream?
We're going to talk about it. That very question. Tonight, we're going to talk about it. Okay? All right, so that's the basic process. Now, it's not crazy. If you think about it, I mean, it's very attractive. You could never get to Majjhimika, and probably this would be very effective. It's the other Mahayana school of Buddhism. It's not some crazy dude, you know. This is the other big Mahayana branch of Buddhism is saying that's what is going on. The Prasangika viewpoint is more radical. The reality is more radical than that. But in the meantime, that explains events happening to you through karma. It has to be that way. Where did you think karma stayed? What's your alternative? Karma stays on Mars and comes back to Earth every 5 years or something? It stays in your mind stream. And then it emanates the things, and it emanates the perceiver of them, and you think you're suffering.
It's kind of literal-minded to assume it needs a space.
Hmm? What's that?
It's kind of literal-minded to assume it takes up space and therefore needs space.
Did I say space?
No, but the kunshi was a place for it, right?
Place for it.
Well, we'll talk about it. Okay, so basically... No, you can't digest everything in one time. Tsongkhapa went into a retreat and for years. I mean, he was very confused about all these things. okay. So if on your homework it said what does the mind only school, what two things does the mind only school say is produced, you know, by a karmic seed? The first is that consciousness. Right here.
Okay, so mine.
What is the question again?
What two things are being produced by that karmic seed? The first thing is your awareness. John Stillwell's mind. What's the second thing being produced? John Stillwell's eyes. And by extension, what he sees. So you can divide it into two things. John Stillwell as the perceiver, as the mind that perceives, is being created by a karmic seed. And then Michael Roach and your vision of Michael Roach is being produced by the same seed. So two things are being the seer and the thing that he sees, which includes the ability to see it, are being produced by that karmic, one karmic seed.
Why is Yule the angry man an extension and not a third thing?
Because that's the way they present it. And I'm not going to change it.
So your perception of yourself is also that?
Oh, absolutely. That's how you get enlightened. You plant all the right bhakti in the kushi.
And then you see yourself as Buddha?
Helen, no more Helen Krishna. I see an immortal deity, in paradise.
So just by reprogramming your perception?
No.
No, just by taking out of it.
What's the only way to change things?
Doing good.
Your reaction to your perception.
Put some new bok choks in there, yeah.
Your reaction to you.
Yeah, put some new bok choks in there.
Online.
I repeat, and I will repeat until I die, until I see myself die. You can't change the... Once the bok chok is growing, forget it, it's too late. You know, take all these great masters and say, you know, oh, just having good attitude while the guy's yelling at you. You know, forget it, it's unpleasant. You're having a good attitude about an unpleasant object. So what's the big deal, you know? It's an unpleasant thing. No kind of attitude change is going to make it pleasant. It's unpleasant to get yelled at, I swear to God. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, it's unpleasant. It's too late to change it. You must now let that bok chok. What happens to all seeds when they produce their results?
Disappear.
They die. They disappear. Acorns disappear when the trees come out. For God's sake, don't put a new bok chok in there by getting mad at him.
No, wait a minute. You have to put a new bok chok in there.
A good one.
Well, one is going to produce the other, right? Or unless you go blank while you're looking at the red boss, right? I mean,
well, there will be there could be a neutral bok chok.
Well, I didn't say whether they were neutral or what. Just
we're saying, let's create a good bok chok.
Is self-awareness part of mental awareness?
Yeah, sure. Different schools have different people.
But it's always coupled with
is there a thing called rangrik, which is
yeah.
There's a word for
self-awareness.
There's a real word for it. Apperception. No, in the higher schools it doesn't exist. The ability of the mind to see itself as it's seen is not accepted by the higher schools. But it is accepted by the mind-only schools.
In the mind-only school, what is the scope of the mind and the space it occupies? And that's, you know, like the mind equivalent to the entire universe? What is their take on what the mind
is? If you think of it that way, I mean, you just visualized it correctly. Because really, when you look up and see the stars in the sky, that's you're looking at your own mind. You're looking at Kunshi emanating stars.
Yeah. And yet your mind has been formed.
That's the way it is now. I mean, it's very close to that now. You just don't know about it. But why did they get into all this? They're trying to explain how bad things happen to you and how good things happen to you because you did good karma or bad karma. Where did you think the bad god boss came from? I mean, did karma go to Jupiter and create his mom and then he was born? And what did you think when we used to talk about it all this time, these months, about collecting bad karma and that creates a bad feeling and a bad sensation. Where did you think he came from?
And you interpret the way he behaves as being bad.
There's a difference between how you perceive the boss and that you perceive the boss. I mean, in a sense. Okay.
They're talking more radical. Both are tied together.
No, they're saying the boss, that you perceive a boss of any kind is produced by the bhakti. Yeah. Rather than that there's a being out, an empty being out there, which forms a basis upon which your bok chok stands.
But I'll tell you something. Even in the higher school, those parts which you interpret to be an empty bok chok in the higher school are also results of your bok chok. That part we accept. And that's very, very profound. That's very important. Otherwise, how could karma work? That's the name of the course, right? Now you know how karma works. That's how karma works.
I always thought that there was the perception, you know, our inner process of interpretation of our mind, as well as the arising of events upon which we...
I understand. You thought there was some kind of self-existent material interpreting it.
I didn't say self-existent.
I know you didn't, but you got to be very careful because you're flirting with self-existent. In the back of your mind, you're flirting with self-existent.
It's the idea that there are components floating around.
Right, and there are atoms, they are out there,
And I'm here, and I'm, and because of my karmas, I'm interpreting them in certain formations.
Yeah, right.
You can accept that for now.
It's not
accurate. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. It's coming. Okay, so that's what's happening according to the mind of the school. Now, I want to go on to one more thing. So if on the homework they said, what are you really looking at when you look at the boss, the angry boss? And what is it that you're really aware of when you're aware of your eyes being closed? What are you looking at? Mind only school. What are you really looking at?
There is no boss, there is no I. It's a box up functioning in the kunshi.
You are looking at kunshi itself. Kunshi is emanating as a, because of the Bhakshak's influence, kunshi is emanating as your boss, it's emanating as your own I. It also happens to be producing your consciousness of it.
See, this whole idea of emanating implies that there's an outside.
Yeah. Well, emanating means it's that clear stuff called mind is taking on that form for you because of a previous Bhakshak.
In your mind.
Well, he likes, he wants it to be projected onto something. If anything, it's, I don't know, you could think of it as, it's like a horseshoe, right? And the whole, it's all that kunshi stuff. And here's your eye and your mind, and you're just looking over there at your boss, but it's all your mind that you're looking at. It's your own mind that's emanating as your boss, and your own mind is emanating as your own mind. And that's how karma produces its result.
So when they say that it's taken on its form, they don't mean, and there's no physical.
No, they don't accept outside physical. So outside of your mind.
And how does the deed become the seed?
Oh, that's what we're going to talk about right now.
Wait a minute, Michael, one second. You just said the kunshi emanates.
Yeah.
Before that, you said the bhakshak is the one.
Well, the bhakshak triggers the kunshi to emanate a certain way.
The bhakshak lives in the kunshi.
So the
it's
whole
also
reservoir starts emanating. I don't understand.
Yeah, the reservoir starts taking on different appearances.
So it's like a mirror.
Yeah. You can say that.
Little bhakshak.
Yeah. The little bhakshaks explode, and one of them turns into a little boss's face, and one of them turns into Michael Roach's eye, and one of them turns into Michael Roach's mind seeing the boss. And now, how does that happen? Let me make sure I covered it. Oh, so what are you really looking at when you look at your eye or the outside form?
Kunshi.
You're looking at that foundation consciousness. You're looking at that big horseshoe of silly putty that's clear and takes on whatever form it wants to according to your consciousness. How is the karma planted? How are the mental seeds planted? Where do they stay? And how do they go on in the meantime? That's our next subject. I think somebody asked that. We'll put back that kunshi here, okay? The way a seed is planted, the way a karmic seed is planted. Forget that aura, okay? That's lower school stuff, right? This is more subtle. You do a deed. Let's say that you start yelling at somebody. You yell at someone. And as that deed comes to its conclusion, as that deed approaches its end, the energy of that deed. You think of the deed as this, okay? You know, you're yelling. You get tired of yelling, and it starts to fade out. Your bad deed starts to come to a conclusion. At the very next instant, it transfers its energy to the kunshi in the form of a bhakshak forms.
Okay. What are you talking about? You're talking about energy. It loses its energy.
It doesn't make sense in science, right? I mean, what it means is that the awareness of yelling, your awareness of you yelling, which is a kind of consciousness, you know, you see yourself yell. As that awareness starts to conclude, and as you start to close your mouth, that stains the kunshi with a bhakshak. It plants a bhakshak in the kunshi. It plants a mental seed in your storehouse consciousness, in your foundation consciousness. As you finish your deed, the last energy is concluded, and that energy is transferred into the as a bhakshak, into the kunshi. Starts in the kunshi.
So it's like an energy that stains the kunshi?
Yeah. A bhakshak is a very difficult idea. It's true. This is the higher school believes it also. Bhakshak is not mental and it's not physical. It's a kind of energy that stays in your mind.
as we think of energy, like
mental
energetic
seed.
Particle.
Yeah. It's some kind of existing thing which is changing, and it's like a potential that remains in the mind.
So is that from a self-existent thing?
No. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about why it's not.
Michael, what's your example about yelling? Let's say in the middle of yelling, you realize what you're doing and you feel deep regret and you apologize to the person. Is it stored differently than if you scream your head off and then...
Yeah. Because your awareness of the event is different by the time it's over.
So what's the arbitrary factor that chops it off at this point? I mean, why couldn't it be bad karma from yelling and right after that, good karma from being sad about it? Why
I'll tell
it
you.
Where's the guillotine here?
At the point at which that deed would no longer cause you suffering in the future, it's no longer a bad deed. Nice answer?
So what you're saying is the three various...
At the point where it changes its nature and is no longer going to cause you suffering in the future, it's no longer a bad deed.
That's the same thing.
So
that's a circle.
It is a circle, and I want it to be that way. But that's what I want bad deeds to do for you. It's not guilt, it's not what anybody says, it's not anything else. Whatever will cause you suffering in the future.
So the bhakchaks are created by the three types of deeds, neutral, bad, or good.
Yeah.
And as long as there's a steady, contiguous block of bad, it's building a bhakchak. And the moment it switches from being bad to a neutral, the chop-off goes and that becomes...
We're going to talk about it.
And then the next input is going to be neutral until it changes to being good or bad, then it chops off like that.
We'll talk
and
about
it's
it.
Constantly...
We're going to get to that in this course. It's called black and white karma and mixed black and white karma. All Buddhist schools believe that. There's no Buddhist school that says that's not true. Where does the karma stay? How does it stay? The mind-only school says, right after the deed reaches its conclusion, that energy is planted in where?
Mind.
Okay, so if anybody ever asked you, where does the mind-only school say that those mental seeds stay? Until they produce their result, until they start to look like the result. Well, that's in the kushi. And that's why they say kushi has to exist.
When they start to look like their result, if they undergo a transformation that takes place before...
No, they don't start to. No, they don't say anything like that. Now, the last question about this. Let me take a break. Yeah. Pretty good. There's a big question of what you just said. How does this little circle, how does this little box chart, how does this little mental seed, how does it stay around so long? Is it permanent? No. It continues by, it also goes on moment by moment, right? Like all impermanent things, like all changing things according to Buddhism, it's a stream. It's actually a stream of little replications on itself. So if somebody says to you, oh, well, are bhakchaks permanent? Because my God, they stay a million years before they give their result. You say, no, they're not permanent. Well, do they change by the instant like all other changing things? Yes, they go through a constant fluctuation. But they are a chain of similar forms. So it's just replicating. By the way, what John Stillwell is throughout his life. I mean, he is being destroyed by the instant. He is just a series of, you know, when you have enough, when the film goes fast enough, all those separate pictures start to look like a flow, and it's the same thing.
What determines the nature of the changes?
We already talked about that. How powerful your motivation was, what was the kind of object you did the deed towards, you know, things like that.
But that particular box can only be effective by the original deed that...
In Mahayana, a good confession can affect it.
Does this have anything to do with with when you say if you kill a fly, then your ribs will be crushed at some point? I mean,
yeah.
Does this have to do with that?
Well, the time lag is from here to... By the way, this is where you yelled at somebody else, right? And it stays there. And then it produces its result as somebody, what?
Yelling at you.
Yelling at you. Okay. Is it a person yelling at you?
No.
How could mind create a person? Mind creates a mind. The awareness of yourself yelling creates an awareness of yourself being yelled at. I love it. It makes a lot of sense to me. Therefore, the content is similar. Nasty content going in, nasty content coming out.
But not only that, it grows, though. It's not something
it's
that...
a lot of little guys yelling at you.
No, it gets more potent.
Very patient. Go ahead.
If Bhakchak exists as a stream of individual discrete elements, by the way,
no, it's little Bhakchak giving rise to another Bhakchak giving rise to another Bhakchak. This is an explanation of why Bhakchak is not a permanent, unchanging thing, which we all know can't create anything.
Is it an absolute continuum, or is it
164th
of a second repeated?
It's being destroyed. The top of the definition of impermanence,
that
object which is growing and is being destroyed by the instant.
Is it touching? So, for example, is the Buddha the mind?
You're getting in. If you follow this reasoning, you'll reach emptiness. You can't put your mind on it. Are they touching? I think no.
Is the Buddha?
Are they not touching? No.
Is the Buddha continuous, or is the Buddha a series of discrete?
Think of it as a film. Think of it as the frames in a film.
Okay, is a mind
and to you, they're happening so fast that to you it looks like it's one
is
film.
Is the mind also a thing?
Absolutely, yeah. It's called the
Santani. The entire empty universe is a series of discrete events.
All impermanent things.
But the Buddha is...
Buddha is impermanent. Actually, long story. Okay.
Michael.
By the way, I don't like the word. You know I don't like the word permanent and impermanent. Changing or unchanging. His physical form is changing. His emptiness is unchanging. His Dharmakaya is unchanging.
How does it replicate itself?
By the force with which this energy was transferred at this point.
But that seems to imply that the energy itself has
some kind of innate identity?
No, but some sort of... I don't know.
Yeah, all objects have the ability to... There's a whole school of thought about second chapter of Abhidhamma Kosha. There's something about you which keeps your robinness going until you die. There's a similarity between you now and you in 5 minutes from now that we call a stream. Now what causes that is the power of the bhakti. And one day it will wear out and you'll stop looking like Robin and we'll say Robin died and Robin's not here anymore.
But power energy sounds to me like it's an out quality, but
no, not enough.
Bhakchak has
oh,
quality.
Absolutely. Oh,
so
yeah, because it's going to create a yelling guy.
So those qualities are...
Yeah, what quality? The quality of being non-virtuous, or virtuous.
And they're part of what caused these replicas. They're part of the mechanism that caused
it. They trigger the... when they flower, you think you see a guy yelling. You think you see an outside guy yelling. You see your own mind looking like an outside guy yelling. Now, does it matter?
No,
it's still unpleasant. It still stinks. But the point is, if you understand how it works, you can stop it. Is it invalid? Is it less than what you thought it was? Does it not hurt anymore if you know it's your own mind playing tricks on you? It still hurts. It's still bad. It might as well be real. It looks real. It acts real. Does everything else it's supposed to do. It's unpleasant. It still hurts you. Still can kill you. Still can shoot a gun at you. Still you will fall down. It doesn't make it all invalid. It makes it more valid because it explains why it's happening and how you can change it. That's great. It doesn't mean it's not valid. You know, as I often say, go to the dentist, have him drill your teeth, and meditate on how it's your kushi just showing you as a cavity being drilled on. It doesn't help; it still hurts. You know, it's reality.
If two questions: if you yell at someone, and then you have this energy that plants the bhakchak in the kushi and it continues as a series of discrete events up until the time it ripens, why don't you perceive it when it ripens as yourself yelling at someone again? Why is it turned around at you?
This I haven't quite clarified in my own mind yet. I don't know.
I mean, it seems to me if you...
I know what you mean. You know? If it were totally incompatible result and cause, then it should be just yourself yelling more. There's something about it that it's the very nature of karma. It creates an unpleasant... The definition of virtue, the definition of non-virtue, creates a non... creates an unpleasant result. There's something about it that reverses, I agree. Yeah.
The second question is given that you have this energy that plants the bhakchak which continues until it ripens, it seems as the energy dissipates, you know, it becomes less and less and less, and yet karma grows and expands. Why is karma expand since the bhakchak is lessening or continuing the same or whatever?
I don't know. We know it's a principle that it does grow, right?
Why should it grow?
Why does a tree continue to grow after, why does a tree get so much bigger than the acorn?
Well, the acorn
itself, until it produces the tree, doesn't get bigger, right?
With the case of the acorn, you have the nutrients going in the water and the minerals, so you have other factors coming into play.
I think you're feeding it with ignorance, actually. And that's another story, and maybe that's the answer. And I don't want to get into it because we're going to run way over, but they say there's another consciousness called messed up consciousness. Okay? It's called yin-yin. Klesha consciousness. Looks at its ignorance, and it looks at Kunshi and misinterprets everything about Kunshi, and that's probably what makes the karma grow bigger. It's the ignorance about it and the bad attitude about it. Yeah, I don't want to go into it. There's another consciousness, it's called Klesha consciousness, bad thought consciousness, that looks at Kunshi, misinterprets it, and probably makes the karma worse. Okay, one more thing. What does the Madhyamika Prasangika? The Sem Sampa, the mind-only school. Chandakirti criticizes them. Tsongkhapa criticizes them. Nagarjuna criticizes them. And they say, well, what do you want? Where do you think the karma sits? If there's no big pool of my mind for it to stay in, well, Mr. Chandakirti, where does it stay?
Here's your mind.
Chandakirti says the stream of your mind. The stream of your regular consciousness. The same old consciousness. Your basic consciousness stream. Wait, let me do a little bit more, because this is going to be confusing. Okay. And Tsongkhapa says, and the great scholars of the time said, what he means by stream of mind here is John Stillwell. He doesn't refer to stream of mind per se. He refers to John Stillwell, the flow of John Stillwell. The flow of Robin Brinkman. That's where the karma is. Not even in their mind.
You mean the flow of you experiencing yourself at the moment is John Stillwell.
Madhyamika. Madhyamika Prasangika.
Yeah.
The simple, unexamined me. They call it the simple me. Tom Carden. Don't worry about, don't get into his emptiness, don't get into blah, 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 don't look too deep. You know, the John Stillwell, you remember we said simple well self-awareness in the last class?
Right.
Buddhists have it. You know, Buddha says, I'm Buddha. I'm Shakyamuni. He took 7 steps or whatever, 8 steps, and he says, I'm the greatest being in the world. Cassius Clay, whatever. He said that when he was born. Okay? He came out of the mother's womb and said, I'm the greatest, you know. He has an awareness of himself. That simple awareness of me, I, Michael, that's where the karma is.
Well, then when you died, it would all go away.
That simple I. No, Tom Kiley goes on. What are you talking about? Tom Kiley before.
No. Tom Kiley doesn't go on because the previous life I'm going to be.
You're going to be somebody
Jane
else?
Kiley or something like that. All right. So if what you say is true, when Tom Kiley disappears, all that karma will disappear.
You're right. Technically, I should say the simple me. Me won't disappear.
The me which is currently experiencing myself as Tom Kiley.
Yeah. Me. It's planted in me. Just me. And they say just me, not some. If you want to see the word, it's not some. Not some. Where does the karma stay? If you Madhyamika, you big Buddhist scholars, you know, you don't accept our idea of this Kunshi. Well, where does the karma stay? Well, just in you. In you. And that you, according to the higher school of Buddhism, is you looking at your mind and your other parts and saying, me. Interpreting it as me.
You just said
that's where the karma is.
You said the stream of mind. You didn't say me before. You're saying
and then I said what stream of mind means here is you thinking me about your stream of mind.
You just
so
said
either way it's fine.
You can say either way. If you're one of those people in the class like Ariel who wants to fly high, technically it's not your stream of mind. It's you. A label put on your stream of mind and your arms and your legs and everything. If you put stream of mind on the homework, I don't mind. If you put simple me, I like it better. You won't know what that means for a long time. But think of it, let it cook. That's very deep. That's where the karma is. It's a lot more comfortable to think that it stays in some big pool where you that you carry along with you. And that's why the Buddha taught Kunshi, right? It's one of the four schools. Buddha taught it. It's valid. It works. It has a use. It's a good way of thinking about it. It can help you.
Are you saying then the idea of the me is more accurate than the Kunshi?
It is. It is more accurate.
And so the bakshats which are carried in your regular mind stream?
Yeah, there is no mind.
Yeah, are you?
Just tongue.
So are you saying, would another way to be say it then, is that all of the thoughts...
How did it can help you?
Are you saying then the idea of the me is more accurate than the Kunshi?
It is more accurate.
And so the bakshats which are carried in your regular mind stream?
Yeah, there is no mind.
Yeah, are you?
Just tell
me. So are you saying, would another way to be say it then, is that all of the thoughts you've had, all of the actions you've done, all of the deeds, you know, everything, has led you to who you are at this discrete moment in time, and therefore the result of you is the sum of your karma?
We're going to talk about it. I know that you're going to have trouble with this idea, so I stuck in the reading and I'm going to go over what does this big, big, high school say? It's just you. What do they mean when they say just me? And we're going to do that after the break. It's going to be a rough class. Hang on to your seats. But it's very important. I think if you're a thinking person, you can't accept karma unless you get some kind of discussion like this. Where does it stay? How does it stick on you? You know, in the lowest schools, the Abhidhamma says, oh, there's this invisible saddle cinch. They love these things, right? They got this Namurik Jing Mayimbe Soup, right? They got this aura, right? So they say, oh, well, there's this big thing. It looks like a saddle cinch. And it's called a kopa. And all your karmas get stuck in there, and you carry them along with you, you know? They don't say there's a physical belt-like thing, but they say there's an energy called a belt that keeps those things on you. And, you know, that's how they explain it. Take a break. We come back. There's a famous verse that's in your reading. If you do the memorization, you're supposed to memorize it. It's from a sutra called the Sutra Requested by Upali. And it basically says that heaven is made by your mind. And then Shantideva has a quotation that says hell is made by your mind. You know, don't think, Shantideva has a very famous quotation that says in the Bodhicharitara, don't think that hell was made by... What do you think? Some Acme construction company went down under the ground and made hell, you know? Who made hell? You know, you made hell. You make it with your own mind. Does that mean that if you're in a bad mood, this world looks like hell? No. It means that there really is a place where beings are in millions of years of torment, and that's hell, but you create it through your karma. And when you get there, it exists through your perception. And that's very, very famous. So I'm going to tell you how in scripture those quotations are all over the place. So the mind only school says, by the way, in those quotations the Buddha often says the world is only your mind, you know, the universe is only your mind, the universe and all the beings in it are only mind. So the mind only school says, come on, I mean, the Buddha said it's only mind. We're going to name our school after that. We're the mind-only school, and we're the only ones who follow what the Buddha said. The Buddha said it's all mind-only. If you ever get to paradise, your tantric paradise, it's mind-only. If you ever have to go to hell, it's mind-only. So the mind-only school says, we're the right school. Buddha said mind-only. So what does mind-only really mean?
Okay.
If you never learn anything else, learn something. I said that about everything, right? Dzogbe means by your conceptions, through your own conceptions.
Conceptions.
Bhaktam means just labeled through your own conceptions. There's another spelling of this verb in the Sanskrit root, also means just made up by your own conceptions.
And so how do you say it? Chittam.
This is the higher school's viewpoint of reality. This is Madhyamika Prakriti. This is what the Madhyamika says. The world is just what you label it. The world is just what you label it. It sounds close to what? Mind only, but it's a little different, isn't it? They don't say you're looking at your mind acting like your boss. They say you label your boss the angry boss. And I think it's very, very healthy, very good for you guys to know the difference between these two schools. People are always mixing them up. I mean, the average American Buddhist idea of all this stuff is just a big jumble. You know, now you know the difference. Okay? Mind-only school says what? Your eye consciousness grows from a karmic seed, and it's looking at foundation consciousness looking like an object, basically looking at itself. And then the highest school says, no, there are indications of an angry boss out there. There are parts that look like an angry boss. There's a redness there. There's a sweat glinting off there. There's a decibel level coming into the ear. And then you label it what?
Angry boss.
Angry boss. You label those parts angry boss.
And what are those
I'm
parts?
Waiting for this next question. When is this question going to come?
What are those parts?
What are those parts? Listen very carefully. When you go to the glistening sweat on the brow, or the redness of the face, and you check that, that's also a label put on to the redness on the left side and the redness on the right side. And you go to the redness on the left side.
It's like a pen.
And it's the left part of the left side and the right part of the left side. So where is the red?
In your
infinite
mind.
Parts.
This way you'll find its emptiness. If you continue to look, where's the real parts that I'm labeling? You know, parts that are really there that I'm not labeling, you never find them. That's a meditation on emptiness. That's one method to reach emptiness. You will never find them. What does Prasangika say? Leave it alone. Leave it alone. There's a redness, there's a glint off the face, there's a decibel level of the voice. Don't look deeper than that. That's his reality. He's real. Okay? And I'm interpreting as angry boss. It hurts me. It functions. It fires me. It gives me bonuses. It's there. You can't deny its existence. It's operating. Okay? And that's, leave it. Don't go deeper. You know, if you go deeper, you won't find anything. But if you're interested in doing an emptiness meditation at work, which will probably get you fired, do that. You know, keep looking for the boss. He's not there. But on a reality, on a relative level, you know, he's an angry boss. And it does hurt. And he can fire you.
Wouldn't the same proof that we did for the, you know, the parts of the pen apply to this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Same idea.
Yeah, but it's all being labeled onto the emptiness of the boss.
No, it's labeled. What is it really? It's... You never see the whole boss. Come on, you know that. You can't see the bottom of his feet. You can't see his back. It could be all empty for you. Know, he could be one of these RoboCops. You don't know.
Ever ready?
Yeah. You really don't know. You take certain indications. You select indications. You form a mental image of an angry boss. And then you mistake that image for the boss. That's highest teaching of Buddhism. Why do you interpret that redness and that sweating and that voice decibel as an angry boss? What forces you to do that? A bhakcha. Same, we accept it, we believe it. There's a bhakcha. There's one of those nasty little seeds in your mind. It's making you see him that way. Is that now, next time you see your angry boss, what did I have today? I was sick yesterday in class. It was very uncomfortable. So I'm thinking, you know, this is my bhakcha ripening, you know. And I'm seeing Rinpoche, and everything seems, you know, I'm kind of dizzy and feel upset stomach and my head hurts. And this is all indications which I am labeling. Can I get out? I would really like to be out of this right now. I really wanted to be out of this, but it's too late. That is reality. Real. That's reality. And it hurts. And that's why you have to, the game is to change the bhakcha. The game is to use up the old bhakchak, get rid of the old bhakchaks, and make the new bhakchaks. Don't react to the old bhakchaks by making new lousy bhakchaks. That's the name of the game. Once you start hurting, it's too late.
Michael, could you say that the fact that your boss got angry at you to begin with is also part of your...
Absolutely. Everything about it. A mole on his cheek.
not how you interpret, but whatever interdependence...
Arising
that's going on between you.
Interdependent arising means the definition in the highest school of interdependent arising is that I see indications of an angry boss and I label them angry boss. And it is an angry boss and it hurts me.
But I'm asking the fact that he got angry at you, is also a result of your karma. I'm not talking about the interpretive process.
Well, if it's unpleasant for me, by definition.
The unpleasant
process. Not only do we define actions by their results, but we can define the action by... I mean, not only do we define a thing as a good karma or a bad karma by whether it hurts us or not, but if something hurts you, it must have been from a bad karma. But you can go both ways.
So if somebody gets angry at you, it may or may not be your bad karma. It depends on how it makes you feel. Right, okay.
If they're getting angry at you hurts you, which normally it does, if it's unpleasant for you, it must be a ripening of bad karma. What you do from that moment on is total free will. If you want free will, there's your free will. If you have a choice at that moment, you can react the way the whole world reacts, which is with more... But we had it Saturday. We walked out of here, and this big guy came up to Lee Mason and knocked her on her ass. And there was another guy standing there, and he said, "Ain't you going to do nothing about it?" You know, and then we're like,
"Wow."
No. You know, and he said, you know, "What?" We just finished the bhajan. Great, you know. If she doesn't get mad, she didn't get mad. It was very admirable. She didn't look mad. But, you know, we used have a bhajan. You know, we should have a bhajan party, you know. One more bhajan gone. One more bhajan gone and no new bhajan planet. No violence committed. You know, very nice. Yeah.
So this aspect of the unfindable parts, the infinitely smaller and smaller parts, which all come together to be perceived and interpreted, what causes the arisal of those and how does that happen?
Ultimately, yeah, this is that point where the Buddha says, "I can't answer you because you're wanting them to be self-existent when you ask the question."
I'm not asking that they be
self-existent. I know you don't think so. Bhakshat. Are they mental? Not according to the school. They are outside physical forms.
They are physical.
According to the highest form.
So how does karma cause physical arising? How does a bhakta cause physical
arising? Well, when you get down to those physical arisings, they're a perception created, placed upon smaller parts of physical things. And ultimately, yeah, it's all an imputation of parts.
Labeling onto the boss or making the boss appear that way is different than making the boss.
I understand. Right. That's true. Well, not really.
Because in one case you're saying there's nothing out there but your mind, and in another case you're saying
there are indications.
There is something.
Yeah.
Seems to be something out there.
At the same time, someone else doesn't see the boss as an angry boss. So what's seeing what? I mean, yeah.
I knew this moment would come in the class, and I want to leave it right there. And I want you to worry about it, and we'll talk about it in the next class. We're going to do the Diamond Sutra, and it's going to be the sun. And it's not out of just. I'm not playing. I'm saying. It's the whole crux.
Right.
And leave it there. You'll see why. Okay. All right. Last thing. So, last question is, and I'm actually almost going to end on time. So that the mind-only school comes to these prasangikas and says, "Well, then what did the Buddha mean when he said everything is mind-only? According to you guys, it's not just mind-only. There are indications out there, and you're labeling them, you're interpreting them in certain ways. Well, if it's not mind only, why did the Buddha say everything was mind only?" And the prasangika could give two answers. The first answer is in a negative way, and the second answer is in a positive way. The negative answer is, the Buddha wanted you to know that these are creations of karma, and not of some what?
Real thing.
No.
Creator God.
Yeah, there's no God up there saying, "Gee, I think I'll give so-and-so some cancer today." You know? So in a negative way, the Buddha said, you know, hell is made by your mind, so you wouldn't think it was made by some sadistic guy. In a positive way, what do you get? He wanted you to know that the mind is the main thing. That mind, as opposed to what? What is it that really causes us? Where did you really come from? We talked about that first moment of you and your mommy's tummy.
Well, me as a self-existent being came from my ignorance.
Yeah, it came from your mind. Your mind, they're talking about the 12 links of dependent origination, right? What's the first link up there? It's your ignorance. It's just, the world is mind only in the sense that it's mainly mind, in the sense that it's mainly coming from your own mind's ignorance of the past. That's what the Buddha meant when he said all this stuff is mind-only. He did not mean that you are looking at your own consciousness and seeing things appearing on that consciousness. And that's what Chandrakirti, that's how Chandrakirti says to the mind-only school. That's what the Buddha meant when he said mind-only. Maybe you want to change the name of your school now or something? Okay. That's all.
Can you go over that last part again?
Yeah. In a negative way, the world is mind-only in the sense that it was its creation of your former karma, mainly your stempa, mainly your mind, and not a creation of a god. And that's why we say mind-only. And in a positive way, you should understand that mind is the main thing. Mind is the main aspect. Main cause.
Okay.
So I just want to say, you know, I mean, what's the whole practical implementation of all this? It makes it very clear. I mean, once you get this explanation, and you get so you have now a decent argument for how karma is actually planted in your mind, or you, and how it comes back to you, then what do you have to do? You cannot anymore ignore any one of your actions. You have to go down now to a very fine level of observation of yourself. And you have to watch yourself. Now you can't allow any more bhajaks to be planted, even by negligence, or even by compulsion. You're now educated. You know what's happening now. You've got to now, you know that any time you see yourself doing something bad, it's planting a bhajak. It absolutely is and must be planting a bhajak. Once that bhajak is planted, it's very hard to get it out of the mind state. Extremely difficult. You're going to have to experience it. And now you know how you experience it. The whole principle of how you experience is basically accepted by Madhyamika. So now you've got to be goddamn careful with your bhajaks. You know, your whole life now you have to be very careful with what you do and say and what you think. Because every time you do something, every time you think something, it's planted. And it stains your mind. And you can't, to get it out is almost impossible. You know, to purify that is almost impossible. So now it gives you even more reason to follow those 10. You must follow those 10.
No, it's almost impossible.
I mean, a very, very good Mahayana confession purification can do it. But don't forget that involves domsen. Domsen means restraining yourself almost ever again. I mean, it's almost a successful purification doesn't mean having a nice ceremony and finishing it and then your mind is pure. Those bhajaks are stopped. It depends a lot on the process of not doing it anymore. And most of us who have learned purification ceremony think that the next day we can go back to throwing more bhajaks in there, because why worry, you know? The day after you can clean them all out. It's not like that. If you're still doing what you did 10 years ago, which I am, then all those purification ceremonies it's not complete. There's something not there, lacking. It's not going to work. You have to be very careful.
That mind-only presentation sounds like, and you mentioned it at the end of the class here, it sounds like the last class, where it makes you the creator God of everything. And if you're the being that's creating everyone else out there through these bhakshaks and the
kunshi,
right?
Yeah.
Then why do you need to create all these other beings? Why do you need to have a sequence? Why do you need to create a time frame within which all these things are appearing? Why not just get it over with and do it at once?
When Rinpoche was asked that question in the abandoned bank in Brooklyn, and you were there, maybe?
No.
What do you want? All these Buddhas are going to retire?
Well, there aren't any all these Buddhas. I just am fooling myself into thinking that there are by the country.
Yeah. Anyway, that's one of the most important classes you ever had. And now you have to buy karma because you have a good argument for it.
Michael, can I ask you a question about the way the karma is carried in the Madhyamika Prasangika?
Yeah.
You know, you were saying that they say it's just carried in me, right? Would an accurate way to think of that be to say that all of your past karmic deeds have formed you, your mind, to be how it is now. Therefore, your the present moment, the state of your mind in the present moment, is the resultant outcome of all your past karma. And the way, and its predisposition to behave in a certain way is the sum of all your past karma. Therefore, if you, therefore,
I'm sorry.
You can say
that, but
Which it? Which it?
It. Yeah.
Say that again. Your mind's. A yeah.
That also.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the end of Class 5.